You're listening to Girovagando, the cycling podcast at the 2023 Giro d'Italia. Today we are in Cazzano Magnago.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
Buonasera.
Buonasera Daniel.
Il barone Brian Nygaard. Do I need to give you your full CV, your full palmarès?
Absolutely.
Former
not.
Team
Absolutely
press
not.
Officer, multiple teams, team manager. Brian, I think the listeners can probably tell we're indoors today.
Yeah.
And it's a day to be indoors, isn't it? Because it has rained all day, which is a familiar story now on this Giro d'Italia, and it was a pretty miserable day.
I mean, the riders might do a couple of hundred kilometers under the rain. We can't record outside if it's not
certainly
dry.
Not. We're in a lovely trattoria. We're in the heart of Brianza, I would say, which is the area sort of between Milan and Lake Como. I know this area pretty well, as do you, Brian. And this is this trattoria where we are this evening. Some lovely film posters all over the wall. We've got lovely Aubrey Hepburn Breakfast at Tiffany's posters, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I can see. It's a sort of typical, I think. Brianza kind of trattoria we'll be eating here shortly. You've got a lovely Tipo Pils, not a Tipo Pino beer waiting for you there. I've got a Crodino. But Brian, we did on today's stage, we went through some very distinguished towns, a very distinguished part of Italy, Lago Maggiore. There was a large portion of the stage, certainly in the finale of the stage, into Cassano Magnago that skirted Lago Maggiore. It went through places like Stresa, a place with sort of tangential, we like these tangential references, don't we?
Place cycling of literary fame as well.
Yes, why, Brian?
Well, it's quite famous in the American and the world literature because of Farewell to Arms. Probably the best, or if not the most famous and well-known book written by Ernest Hemingway. And the scene is set in that area as well, and it was actually an area where he also spent a part of his life after he was recovering from, I think they pulled out 200 pieces of shrapnel from his leg.
Wounded up on Monte Pasubio, which is in the Veneto.
Yeah, and he was a first aid helper in the Italian army in the First World War.
And Brian, yes, he was given time off effectively to recover, and he did so in Stresa, and this was a source of great inspiration for him. He stayed at the hotel, basically the hotel named after the islands on Lago Maggiore, the Ile Borromée, given their French name. I think that's what the hotel's called, the Grand Hotel des Îles Borromée. And he was so inspired by Stresa that he set much of Farewell to Arms there. He also met somewhere, I think up on Monte Pasubio, he met a cyclist who had finished on the podium, or had by the end of his career finished on the podium in the Giro d'Italia four times, and Bartolomeo Aimo inspired Hemingway to such an extent that he named the ambulance driver in Farewell to Arms after him. And there's a sentence, quite a sort of axiomatic phrase in Farewell to Arms about bicycles, pronounced by Bartolomeo Aimo. But Hemingway also, he crossed paths with the Giro once more, didn't he, in 1948. I think he was going trout fishing, and he just happened upon the Giro d'Italia. It was a famous day.
Famous edition.
Yes, 1948 edition, and it was a very famous stage where, I think, because if I recall, Gino Bartali was eating a banana on the road towards Canazze on the Passo Rolle, and Fastocopy attacked at that point and dropped him very dramatically. Brian, that was a rather large, long historical detour, but it was that kind of day, wasn't it? An exciting stage, a breakaway stage. Not too much happened in the general classification, although the pink jersey did change hands. We're going to hear about that in a minute. But Brian, we're going to have a slightly different structure to today's podcast. Usually at this point, we go to the tail of the tapper. But I propose we go back to the start of the day. We go back to Switzerland, which you're probably
I'm
not
just
thrilled
shaking my
about.
Head over here.
And we hear from a couple of riders who would be very much in the thick of the action today. And well, the first of them is a familiar voice on this podcast. And without further ado, let's go back to Ciel this morning and have today's installment of La Ranzando.
La Ranzando, a postcard from Italy with Larry Warbass.
Larry's still smiling. Larry, 10 degrees. You gonna ride today? 10 degrees sunny? You boys gonna...
If it's 20 degrees in the bus, why do we need to go outside?
I spoke... we'll get onto the serious business in a minute, but I did speak to a team manager this morning. I can't reveal his identity. He said, we don't need any rain gear anymore on this team. I'll tell the sponsor we don't need it anymore because you guys won't ride in the rain anymore.
Yeah.
The riders were not very impressed by this, apparently.
I guess not, huh? But, yeah, I mean, if they're not on the bike, I mean, I get it if they want their guys to ride. But, you know, it's hard to say because before the stage, if you look at, like, the weather forecast, it was, like, Dantesque. And in the end, it was... Maybe it would have been okay, but I'm sure it would have been similar to the days, the one day before that was really cold. But I still think they made the right decision when you look at the weather forecast and you took everything into account. We didn't know that it was going to be dry on the other side, like 100%. So, I know the fans were disappointed, but in the end, I think it was still a good race to watch, probably.
It was. I suppose, you know, what's the lesser of two evils? Because yesterday it was based on the forecast, wasn't it? It was based on a hypothesis. The alternative is we have a commissaire or a team of commissaires who are ready to cancel the race if it gets to that point, if they need to. But then people aren't happy either if the race is completely cancelled. At least yesterday, I suppose, we got a full race. But those are the two scenarios that have to be weighed up, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the thing is, I mean, I couldn't even imagine how difficult it would be to cancel the race if you had, like, you know, some guys 10 minutes up the road, other guys 30 minutes off the back. I mean, how do you even arrange everyone? Then guys, you know, I think if we would have done the race yesterday, we probably would have lost another 20 guys. And then you have maybe 110 guys left in the Giro with more than a week to go. So I don't know if that's a good solution either. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, it's like I said the other day, I think we kind of lose on both sides. So, you know, it is what it is. And at least it was a nice race yesterday for a lot of guys.
And just on the rejig route, Larry, just 70 kilometers. I mean, being from Motown, being from Detroit, it should be no surprise that you're a diesel engine. And I don't think you particularly like those fast starts, do you?
No, I mean, I think for me, it's better to have like a really long day and, you know, a longer fight for the break. And at the start, I kind of had a look and I went with one thing and I went a little bit into the red. And then when you're on like an almost hour long climb, it's hard to recover when you go in the red. But yeah, in the end, I recovered, and actually, I had decent legs, but, you know, if you saw the breakaway, aside from Derek G, I mean, I think we had the four lightest guys, Pino, and then a really solid Canadian, so...
Canada Goose.
Yeah, he's impressive. Yeah, he'll be one to watch in the future, for sure.
Well, Brian, some talk there about yesterday, the events of yesterday, the polemica of yesterday, and Larry there... Very prophetically, I suppose. We finished up talking about Derek G, who I referred to in that conversation with Larry as the Canada Goose. Of course, Derek G, we learned about his passion for ornithology earlier in the Giro d'Italia. And, well, I had the chance to speak to Derek G in Ciel as well this morning about... yesterday's stage, which was another day in the break for him, and also birds once again. And Brian, so thrilled are we with Derek G's performances in this Giro d'Italia, this inspired a new feature that premieres tonight. And as you can see, as you'll be able to hear, we went to great expense. We hired a very expensive studio for the recording of this jingle that you're going to hear. A lot of work went into this. So anyway, take it away. This is Derek G's words of wisdom. Derek G, Derek G, Derek G, Derek G, speaking words of wisdom, Derek G. Another fantastic day yesterday. I mean, this is becoming the norm now.
Yeah, it's a bit shocking, honestly. looking at the stage profile yesterday, I definitely didn't expect to be up there. So, yeah, I'm really happy with the legs.
You were sort of, well, you had a front row seat of Thibaut Pinot's efforts to win the stage. Everyone else was sort of exasperated at how much he was attacking. And they thought that didn't really help him in the end. What did you think?
I mean, I was just doing my own race. I knew those guys were all climbers and, you know, they're doing their thing to win the stage. And, yeah, I knew I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't follow the moves. It was just a little too punchy for me. So I just rode my own climb and let them do their thing. And, yeah, made it back to them once, but couldn't do it again.
And Derek, I promised the other day there was bound to be people volunteering ornithological nicknames for you. And we've had a few. The Ottawa Osprey, the Loon. The Loon is a bird in Ottawa, near Ottawa, and it's also the name for a dollar, slang for
$1. $1 coin, yeah.
The Senatorial Sparrow, and the Canada Goose. Any preference for any of those?
Those are all good.
I quite like the Ottawa Osprey.
The Ottawa Osprey is good. The Canada Goose is just funny. I don't have a preference. I mean, I just think it's hilarious people are coming up with these.
We'll give you a couple of days to think about it. By the time you've won a stage, then we'll have a definitive answer.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Eh?
So, Brian, no real consensus about what we were going to call Derek G. Seemed to like all of those suggestions. But, as I said earlier, Larry and Derek G were very much protagonists of today's stage. And now, finally, we get to today's Tale of the Tapper.
It's time for the Tale of the Tapper.
Thank you very much, Daniel. So stage 14 from Sierra in Switzerland to Cassano Magnago, here in Italy, 194 kilometers. It started dry in Switzerland, actually quite pleasant this morning. And then as the race went on to the very big climb of the day, the Passo del Sempione, the rain started to come down hard. Plenty of attacking. A lot of riders were eager to go up the road, not just to stay warm, but it was clear from early on that a break had the potential to go all the way. More than 30 riders went clear on the climb, and a strong group started to open a gap. I'm not going to list all the riders. You mentioned two of them already. A lot of strong riders in that breakaway. A lot of fast riders, too. Who
Are you going to mention any of them?
I will mention a few of them. Peter Seri, Pascalon, Luis Leon Sanchez, Nico Denz, Petiol, the Bice brothers, Bruno Amirai, Simon Clark, Gaviria, Carlos Verona. You want more?
No, that will do.
Okay, great. So the best placed rider in overall was Bruno Amirai at 18:37 at the start of the day behind Geraint Thomas, but the gap grew beyond 15 minutes, so it actually started to show up in the virtual GC top 10. First rider to pass the Sempione was David Bice, and that actually meant that he took the jersey back from Thibaut Pinot, and he's now leading the mountains classification with 30 points. Plenty of options for a stage winner in that big group, but as it turned out, actually too many. So the attacking actually started quite early with 65 kilometers to go, and four riders went away. They were Davide Ballerini, Stefano Oldani, Laurent Rex, and Tom Skuins. Tom Skuins, we've seen quite a lot this first part of the Giro. With 25 kilometers to go, they built a gap close to a minute to the other breakaway riders, and the pink jersey group was 17 minutes behind the quartet, and that actually meant that Bruno Amirai was climbing all kinds of position in the virtual GC. They hadn't given up the chase back, so it was very, very close, sort of a cat and mouse with them coming, trying to catch them, those four riders up the road. And it turned out pretty chaotic, and the final actually started to look a little bit like a one-day race in Belgium in April, just kind of like Gent Wevelgem. With 5 kilometers to go, the situation was that they actually, the three in front now, Ballerini, Oldani, and Skuins, they only had 15 seconds to a quite strong group of chasers, Nico Denz, Alberto Petiol, Laurent Rex, Derek G, and Marius Meyhofer. At this point, Amirai was in the pink jersey, and the chasers, the group chasing behind the three in front, they actually managed to close, and that meant that there was a sprint once again. They got caught 400 meters from the line, and Nico Denz actually threw his arms to the air, and it looked like it could have been for the finish, but it wasn't. Once again, and for the third time in this Giro, new jingle man, Derek G, came second. The other winner today was Bruno Amirai, and he's now in pink, and he's the first rider, would you believe it, in 24 years to wear pink. The last one to do that was Laurent Jalabert in 99.
The first rider to wear pink in 24 years. I thought Geraint Thomas was wearing pink today.
The first French rider, excuse me, to wear pink. I was just was a little bit frazzled because the restaurant is starting to get crowded now. I'm curious to see what kind of food and wine they're ordering. Anyways.
The first French rider in 24 years to wear pink.
Yeah.
Pink
jersey.
Right?
The pink jersey, yeah.
That's 99,
Laurent Jalabert. Wow. I remember that year with Laurent Jalabert. He actually looked early on to be potential winner of his second Grand Tour. You know, he won the Vuelta in 95.
Remember Marco Pantani almost giving him a haircut when he went past him so fast on the Santuario di Europa climb.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it drifted away from him. But yeah, quite a big deal for Bruno Mirai, who's clearly here as a helper for Thibaut Pinot. He actually also was specifically a helper for Thibaut Pinot yesterday. But I'm sure we'll hear more about that later in this episode.
We will, Brian, and we prefaced the tale of the Tapa by hearing from our own Motown maestro, Lucky Larry Warbass, and from Derek G. Well, let's hear from them both after the stage about their day in the breakaway. They're contrasting fortunes, really, in the breakaway today.
Well, Larry, we said this morning you didn't like fast starts, you didn't like climbs in the start stages, and well, you proved us wrong, you proved yourself wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a decent day for the break, and then, oh my god, there was like this crazy headwind at the start. I mean, like block headwind, 50k an hour. So, that was like really hard. And then even at one point, there was like a pretty big split in the group, I think. But I was in front, so I didn't really see what was happening. And then, I don't know, it was just kind of like following a lot of moves, and maybe after 20-ish K, like we escaped. And then, but we had a lot of good sprinters in the group, so that was also kind of difficult to see, like, you know, what to do. And with such a big group, like 30 guys, yeah, it's never easy. So, we just kind of rode like a tempo on the big climb, and then, yeah, we all just froze our asses off on the descent. So, yeah, then it was pretty much everyone was just shivering for like 30K. And, and then pretty much attack started, and it was a pretty full gas day. So
in a group like that, a huge group where you know that it's not going to go to the finish in a group that size, do you feel the moment where it sort of slips through your fingers? Do you sort of sense that pretty quickly?
Yeah, I mean, some guys were smart and they kind of like took advantage of guys with rain jackets still on. So, you know, there was a few guys that took their rain jackets off pretty early and then they started hitting it. But yeah, it's kind of a gamble because like, if it doesn't work out and you get really cold, then it's difficult. So that was when that first group of three or four guys went. I mean, that's racing though, you know, that's like strategy. Once they went away, I don't know, we thought there was maybe still a chance because like Movistar had two guys to ride for Gaviria. They got pretty well organized, but in the end, when we hit the first of the hills, it all exploded, and yeah, unfortunately I didn't have the best legs. So,
well, Larry, you look pretty cold at the moment. Get in that shower, warmed up, because we need you in this Giro d'Italia. Thing we need is you getting ill.
Yeah, I need to get in another breakaway and actually get a result next time.
Well done, mate. Good ride.
So strong.
I gotta go, congratulations, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, second again. That's a lot of them. Closest one yet, but I mean, I did everything I could. Nico took it from 900 meters. I couldn't come around him, so I mean, chapeau, that was unbelievable. I don't know what else I could do. it was just a couple meters too close. But yeah, I think his hand hit me in the face when he was celebrating. It was so close, so we'll get there, eh?
Oh. Hey, how different is the feeling today from, well, the first, second place? This is the third one now. I mean, I guess it's sort of progressed to frustration now.
It just keeps getting worse. The first one was awesome. I mean, at least we thought the race was over for a really long time there when they were almost up to a minute. And Stevie Williams did a massive job helping bring it back with Movistar and gave me the opportunity to launch. And then, yeah, he's just stronger today, I don't know.
When's the next opportunity?
I don't know. I think my legs might be a little bit fried.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2023 Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Our Giro coverage is supported by Science in Sport. I wanted to know from Ben Swift of Ineos Grenadiers what his recovery routine is. And I was surprised to find that recovery begins sometimes before the stage has even finished.
For me, it kind of starts even before that, you know, like once my job's done, then I'd have some sort of like starting my recovery already then, you know, so getting like not necessarily the, well, maybe sometimes depending on how it is, like a bit of the protein powder with like some carbs in there, either a 20 or a 40, and then a bottle of like the cherry Rigo, and then also like maybe a little treat, you know, so not something that's something like a Snickers bar or something, you know, like you're still going, it's something like you look forward to, or it's a little bit of morale food as well. So you've done your job, and then once you're back to the bus, because you've already had your recovery and stuff, probably just having a bit of a smoothie, getting your shower, doing your cool down, and then getting your proper lunch in, like your solid food.
Go to scienceinsport.com and search through the recovery products. My particular favourite is the Rigo powder, mixes up into a nice drink, and it's replacing all of the things that you've lost on a ride without really knowing it.
Geraint, you're looking pretty relaxed at the moment, but the stage looked rather cold and wet out there today. Just talk us through particularly that long climb up to Simplona.
Yeah, going up was all right, but coming down was not the nicest. I think I had like 3 jackets on and I was still shivering. Got down it, you know, the boys controlled the brake really well at the start. Best guy in GC, 18 minutes and 45 seconds or something. And yeah, it was a big break, but we were happy for it to go and then just see how it turns out, really, because 9 times out of 10, a big break like that doesn't really ride well together on the flat. There's normally a lot of attacks, and we were kind of half expecting them to start attacking each other on the climb already. But yeah, and then it turns out, you know, they rode really well together, so the speed in front was fast, and we didn't want to overcook our boys just to try and defend the jersey, basically. So, you know, they still rode at decent tempos, decent pace, and ended up giving the jersey, or losing the jersey, however you want to call it, but gave that away. But yeah, I think it was a good decision, because there's no point in 2 guys trying to hold 20 odd guys rotating full gas. So, but happy to get that one ticked off, because it was another long day, pretty much cold and wet.
So, Brian, that was Geraint Thomas, our former Maglia Rosa, explaining why they gave the pink jersey away, or how circumstances conspired to give them the opportunity. I don't think they went into today probably thinking that they would have the opportunity to give the pink jersey away. And ultimately, well, we expect them to have given it away for one day. It will spare them one day of work, or half a day, the first half of tomorrow's stage, perhaps. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that it's also quite normal that, you know, you can have a plan that you present to the riders in the bus and they give their feedback, but what happens on the road, you always need to be flexible, because a situation can arise and then all of a sudden you need to make quick decisions. And they needed that today, and I thought that was a really smart move. However, though, I will say, I'm not sure they get it back tomorrow, because behind the new pink jersey, I mean, things are still really close, especially in between Roglic and Thomas. So I will lose it, but I'm not sure it will necessarily be Geraint Thomas who will take it away from him.
Basically, a Roglification will deprive them of the pink jersey, won't it, tomorrow? 2 seconds, a time bonus somewhere,
yeah,
will give Primoz Roglic the pink jersey.
And I think we're still sort of in that ping pong between those two riders and their teams to see, they'll figure out how much do we gain by taking the jersey by Roglifying Geraint Thomas Jumbo, by Roglifying Thomas for a couple of seconds. Mm. It'll give them the jersey, yes. But if it's only for a couple of seconds, it basically just gives them the responsibility of the pink jersey. And I'm not saying that they're still earning the Giro, because it's not, but it comes with a price.
And Brian, we've got a new Maglia Rosa. His name is Bruno Armirail. He's from Tarbes in the southwest of France. I suppose it's southwest. Trains a lot in the Pyrenees. He's a rider we've known about for 3 or 4 years now. He's very strong, particularly... Well, he's strong on rolling terrain. He's a real workhorse for...
Tall fella.
Yeah, for Groupama FDJ. He was very surprisingly left out of the Tour de France team last year, and he was very disappointed and expressed his disappointment publicly. He then went on hours later, or a day or two later, to win the French National Time Trial Championship, but a very strong rider. And he played his cards pretty well. I think he said at the finish that he would like to have won the stage as well. And there were a few riders who well, there was certainly one rider who played, one other rider who played his cards extremely well, and that was Nico Denz, taking his second stage win of the Giro. And Brian, we've seen this a few times over the last few years, particularly in the Vuelta a España, when a guy who is an outsider, he's a breakaway specialist, an opportunist, he wins one stage and then another one follows. We saw it with Ben King a few years ago at the Vuelta.
So Michael Kyle Anderson at the Tour?
Yes, Michael Storer at the Vuelta in 2021.
Ben King at the Vuelta?
As I just said, Ben King.
Sorry.
I'm glad you're listening, Brian. And Richard Carapaz, maybe not in the same category because he was probably the strongest climber in the Vuelta last year, but he took three stages. And I suppose what happens is that riders who have won one stage, and for some of these riders we've been talking about, we've just mentioned, it was the biggest result of their career, and there's a relief, but there's also that confidence that comes with that, and a confidence which leads to good judgment, and that's what happened today. But let's not also overlook the fact, as Derek G said earlier, that Nico Denz did extraordinary work to put himself in position to win, particularly in those last 2 kilometers.
Yeah, extremely, and I totally agree with the psychological element in it, because he could also poker a little bit in that final. You know, obviously he wants to win when he has a fighting chance for it. But once you have that first win under your belt, you're probably a little bit more in a better position to gamble, I think. And yeah, he just gambled it perfectly right. The one thing that once again though surprised me was how certain he was about the win. Because it might as well have been a photo finish, but yeah, he threw his hands in the air, didn't he?
And biffed Derek G, as Derek G told us, biffed him in the face. But there were no recriminations. And very amiable fella, as we've heard, Derek G. And Brian, who didn't play their cards well? I mean, my sort of first nomination for the sort of prize, the booby prize of the day, the guy who will be kicking himself tonight, and it's the rider who comes from pretty close to where we're sitting now, comes from Cantu. And it's Davide Ballerini, who was one of the fastest riders on paper in the bigger group, let alone the small group, yeah. And then found himself in a perfect position. He was away in the finale with Laurence Rex of Intermarché, and they had beef earlier in the season at the Tour of Flanders. There was an Instagram spat. Rex, I think, crashed at the Tour, but I think they both crashed at the Tour of Flanders, and Rex blamed Ballerini on Instagram, and it went back and forth. I don't think they talked too much today in the break, but Ballerini, he will be absolutely, well, he'll be very disappointed with himself.
I mean, a couple of times today, also in the quite competent commentating on Rai, they were certain that they would stay away. It looked like it, but then, you know, it's that little, maybe they didn't want it. They were looking too much at each other, or one of them started to pull a little bit less. I'll have to say that another one that I think will be very disappointed today, again, is Alberto Bettiol. He's been in a lot of breakaways. He's opened the sort of the pre-final by trying to make a selection, but it just hasn't really panned out for him.
He's a very demonstrative rider in a similar vein to Thibaut Pinot. When he's going well, it's very obvious that he's going well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's not great at playing poker.
No, once he has the legs, he loses his head.
Yes. I think that he will have opportunities later in the Giro, because whenever he's riding well and whenever there are breakaway wins to be had, he's always a threat. And we've seen him before, regardless of tactics, we've seen him overpower a breakaway before. And I thought that was what was going to happen today. He will also be very disappointed tonight. But Brian, you know, I stood at the finish line and watched the riders come over the line, more the peloton than the breakaway. And wow, there were a lot of pretty fed up riders there. Very cold looking riders again. And riders who just look as though they've had enough after 2 weeks.
I mean, you and I obviously, the way that we were going to the finish today took us over the Sempione, and the descent, it was just relentless rain. It was the longest descent I've driven for years in a car at a bike race. And it almost like it was descent from Switzerland all the way into the finish line. And it was, the road wasn't great at times, and it looked like almost like a waterfall from Switzerland flowing into Italy. That wouldn't have been nice. It was 6 degrees on the top, as we mentioned earlier, and then all of that rain. I mean, imagine going to breakaway and then ending off with nothing after having spent all that energy.
Brian, on that note, shall we go back to around about lunchtime today when we went over the Simplon Pass? And, well, here are thoughts and observations from the top of the Simplon as we rode back into Italy.
Well, Brian, another day, another big Alpine pass, another big Swiss pass. Last in yesterday it was the Col Saint-Bernard, today's the Simplon. Yesterday we were heading out of Italy into Switzerland, now we're heading from Switzerland into Italy. Not quite there yet. Just crossing the summit though, and you can probably tell from the sound effects that the weather is, well, very familiar for us on this Giro. It's cold, it's wet, 6 degrees today. The dashboard is telling me, Brian?
It's pretty grim up here, isn't it? I mean, I know this is your type of terrain, but I would say this is, the conditions today are harder than they were yesterday. Coming down, this is going to be very long and very wet and cold descent for the riders once they pass the GPM. Snow, I mean, there's some snow up here, but just a lot of rain on the road. Very, very, very wet, but hopefully not too slippery.
Brian, I said this is a big sort of venerable old pass, some fantastic buildings on here. You're not the first person to point out that a few of the hotels, a few of the structures up here, they look as though they belong in a Wes Anderson movie. There's another one coming just on the right. Brian, this pass was built in the very start of the 19th century, commissioned by Napoleon, sort of unilaterally, didn't really tell anyone, just went ahead and built a pass so he could move artillery across the summit. It's named after the village of Simplon, which is just off to the side of the road, and the people who live in Simplon are semi-affectionately known as, in Swiss German, Schrotfresser. Just cabbage eaters. Apparently they consume a lot of cabbage in these parts.
You're just making it sound more and more attractive to to come here, Daniel. I mean, it is beautiful in a very dramatic way, but if the riders were wanting to avoid certain conditions yesterday, they're getting them today with full force.
I would like to be out there interacting with this, Brian. This is my terrain, my kind of conditions.
L'ordine d'arrivo in cima al Gavia e allora li hanno mandati giù al massacro, insomma.
Ma soprattutto quello che è cambiato lì, la possibilità di comunicare.
Adesso hai tutto che ti comunicano la temperatura, il tempo, col telefonino in tempo reale tu sai cosa succede 10 chilometri più avanti, insomma. I nostri tempi non era così, insomma. No.
Well, Brian, that was us on the Simplon Pass, and then after that we heard a little bit of me in conversation with, well, 1984 Giro d'Italia winner Francesco Moser. I did quite a long interview with Moser today. Friends of the podcast will hear some of that on a kilometre zero that's coming in the next few days. But we were talking about, well, what everyone was talking about, certainly yesterday and still overnight, which was the truncated stage yesterday. The question of the weather. There were questions this morning about whether we would get a full stage overnight. I mean, everyone had an opinion on the events of yesterday, particularly some illustrious riders of yesteryear. Now, Francesco Moser was relatively diplomatic, I would say. Those, you know, if people were expecting him to sort of go down the misty-eyed sort of, it was much better in my day, these are all snowflakes kind of route.
But can I just ask, didn't the Giro he won?
Yes, ironically, yes. Yeah. Ironically, the Giro he won is notorious because there was a big mountain stage that was cancelled.
Yeah, exactly.
Supposedly, allegedly, to favour him.
Glad he hasn't forgotten.
No, however, he did say about that Giro in 1984 that the stage of Bardonecchia, it was so cold, and I think there was snow on that day in particular. He said he had snow blindness. He couldn't see when he got to the finish, and he was completely disoriented. And he talked a lot about some of the conditions that they faced back in the 80s and 70s when he was riding. But his main point about what happened yesterday was that the main change, and we talked about this, was the means of communication. And these sort of moves, initiatives to get stages cancelled or shortened or changed, they kind of spread like wildfire due to things like WhatsApp.
One thing that I always think of when you hear older generations, especially if you go all the way back to Moser and the 80s, were they tougher back then? Probably, but one thing that they didn't have that they have, the riders have today, I mean, they had nowhere near anything the type of technical clothing the riders have today. They had nowhere near the braking abilities of the bike, obviously no disc brakes, and it was completely different game in that sense, at least. I think that we all need to keep that in mind when we say that, oh yeah, they're just saying they were tougher back then. They actually were, because they didn't have the same means of staying safe and dry.
And Brian, several riders from Moser's generation also weighed in on the debate. Most notable probably among them was Mahmoud Diour, who actually found himself at the end of the day with one of his riders in the Maglia Rosa, but of course the Groupama FDJ team manager, pretty well known for his forthright opinions, for his tirades, the Madio monologues. He said on Radio RMC, he talked about the Gavia stage, the infamous Gavia stage in 1988, and he said that day it took him 2 hours to warm up in the shower, and he swore to himself that he would never put himself in that kind of state again. However, looking back now, 30 years later, he's proud that he did put himself through that ordeal. He said, we're not at Roland Garros. We can't just pull a tarpaulin over the court. There are riders still who hurt themselves, who go beyond what their power meters tell them they can do. But this was a sport for people who couldn't do what most people could do. We're not obliged to be, or they're not obliged to be, professional riders. They have the right to abandon. No one blamed the 100 plus riders who abandoned at Liège in 1980 when Hinault won, but we have a unique special sport and we have to protect it. That's what he said. So clearly he's a pretty, I would say, extreme end, or he's at one extreme of this debate. And there were others who struck similar note this morning. Marco Bonorio, journalist for Corriere della Sera, called it a pessima figura, which is basically
an embarrassment.
A complete embarrassment. He said the riders had humiliated the sport and the spectators. Mario Cipollini as well, he suggested that what the riders really need, rather than the CPA and the current CPA president, Adam Hansen, is someone who was basically born closer to Italy. I mean, that was the gist of Cipollini's
those
missive on
Instagram.
Those
decisions shouldn't be left in the hands of someone who grew up on the other end of the planet.
His advice to the current generation was, don't let people decide who were born thousands of kilometers from the Giro d'Italia, physically and in terms of cycling culture. As an antidote to those riders of yesteryear who were very much of the opinion that we shouldn't have had the route change yesterday, Geraint Thomas this morning was interviewed and asked for his response to a lot of what was being said. And he said, well, a lot of things happened in the 80s and 90s. We don't go about things the same way now, and we're proud of that. And it's pretty obvious what he's referring to, isn't it?
Yeah, and who doesn't agree with that? I mean, that's obvious. I'm just not sure that as a counter argument that's actually so applicable. The one thing that makes it hard for me to sort of come in terms with yesterday, if I can just quickly say my opinion, is that I think the adverse weather protocol, severe weather protocol, I think that's a great thing. I think that needs to be applicable, and there needs to be some kind of sense in what we put the riders through. But on the shortened stage, there wasn't any severe weather conditions that would kick in to have that protocol changed. And that's why, you know, and that's also why journalists, older riders, other people say that, well, does that now set a precedence? And what type of sport do we end up with if this is sort of the starting point, that we can just, by votes, could decide what stages or what part of the stages we'll do? I mean, I'm sure that will never happen, but I think the image and the thinking behind that is a very relevant discussion. It's not just about the olden days versus now. It's a little bit about when do we actually apply those different rules, such as the weather protocol.
Yeah, and also harnessing the means of technology available. You know, pretty much real time weather forecasting or radar patterns and so on, yeah, and so forth. I mean, every team has a car that goes down the road to inspect the course and to feedback on
and everything,
any obstacles on the course.
There's not a meter of road in Switzerland that's not under surveillance, you know, so I'm sure they could find some cameras. But also the one thing that struck me when the discussion was on, and that I still find disturbing as well, is that riders used an argument and said, yeah, but it's been raining so much in the Giro, so now we sort of have to take
that weakens our argument.
Yeah, we have to take that into consideration. Why? Why do we have to take that into consideration? That I don't understand. Why does that somehow force parts of a stage to get cancelled? I don't understand that.
Is it realistic to sort of issue the challenge that Marc Madiot did and said, look, if 150 guys want to abandon, that's fine. We want to hail and celebrate and venerate those survivors, those 30 guys left in the race. But that, realistically, we never see that happen. We've never seen that happen since.
Coming back to Cibollini's generation, there was a year in Tirreno when Carmine Castellano was, who was also the race director of Tirreno and the Giro, obviously. And this was before, as always, before San Remo, and there was a big stage, and there was huge chunk of riders, some 80 riders, if not more, who just decided to stay outside the time limit and think, oh, we're so many, so they'll just let us pass anyways. He didn't. He stopped them and said, like, you're out of the bike race. And this was probably on the Tuesday or Wednesday before San Remo. So they also back then tried to somehow coax the race organizers into making their own decisions, and that certainly did not work at the time.
Well, Brian, we've already wound the clock back once today. Let's do so again. You heard from us earlier, just so we crossed the Simplon Pass. We weren't yet in Italy because the Italian border is about 6 or 7 kilometres after the pass, isn't it? And just as we were coming to the Italian border, it was time for us to check in, as we do every day, with our good friend Lionel Burney in Not Watford.
It's past 11, time for my cappuccino break.
La pausa cappuccino con Lionel Burney. Dopo le 11.
Lionel, pronto.
Hello.
How you going?
I'm doing really well. I've just had to slap on the Factor 50 here in the south of England. It's a glorious late May day. And, well, it's not raining on the Giro as I watch it here, but the weather's not good again by the sounds of it.
No, it's filthy. It's filthy. We've just come over the Simplon Pass and we're just... just coming through the border controls, actually. We're just coming through customs, and I greet you in Italian today because we as of about 2 minutes ago, we're back in Italy. In fact, Brian's just seized control of the radio, and Brian is celebrating. I don't know if he's going to give us a rendition.
Excellent.
So the mood.
Have you got Ciro in the boot? Does that mean you've got Ciro in the boot of the car?
No. And I think Ciro's probably even happier than Brian. Ciro hates mountains even more than Brian does. Anyway.
And have you paid the duty on all that Rivella?
I've still got two bottles snuck in the boot somewhere, stuck in the back of the car. Still no news on the missing Rivella, which is down in Foggia, in Puglia, in the car of Primoz Roglic's agent. I actually asked for news of that this morning, and he's got a bit of he's in a bit of a pickle because he's got a car that needs to be rescued from Foggia, and he the only option is to go down there in one car and come back in the car that's marooned in Foggia. He doesn't really know how he's going to do it. So if any listeners would like to volunteer to go and fetch someone's car from Foggia and take it to Switzerland, I'm sure Primoz Roglic's agent would be delighted.
Brilliant. Well, just briefly, I don't want to spoil Brian's look ahead to tomorrow's stage, but I did want to talk about tomorrow's stage to Bergamo and the GC, because it brought back some memories of 2017. Feels like a long time ago now, Daniel, when we were in Bergamo. We were on the hunt for Polenta. We were unsuccessful on that occasion. But it was a day where they went over those two climbs right at the end, and they do the same two climbs in the middle of tomorrow's stage. It's a significantly harder stage, isn't it, tomorrow, than it was 6 years ago. But when I look back at the results and saw how it all shook down over those climbs, it made me realise that tomorrow it's likely to be a GC day, really. Even though it's not kind of mountains that are 2,000 metres high, it's four climbs that will test the peloton and give some opportunities. And the final climb is close enough that to the finish that it will require maximum vigilance. And I'm just starting to look at the GC now, really, for the first time in this Giro. We've got the big mountain still to come, but it's looking like a sort of 3.5-man race at the moment, isn't it? Geraint Thomas, Primoz Roglic, João Almeida, all within 22 seconds of each other as we speak now. I mean, I am tempting fate here, assuming that there's not going to be some kind of ambush on this climb and then sort of some team time trial on the flat to the finish on today's stage. But a couple of interesting people in the bottom half of the top 10. Damiano Caruso has kind of snuck up into fifth place very quietly. And Eddie Dunbar, who I was talking about before the Giro, hasn't had a chance at a Grand Tour for a long time and has just basically ridden silently into seventh place, so quite impressively. And I wonder whether he will look to just kind of sit tight, consolidate that over the final week. On course for a really good result if he can do that.
Yeah, he is, and he's an explosive rider, and he should suit tomorrow's route. We're expecting better weather at least tomorrow, and might even see some sunshine tomorrow. It should feel like a real Giro d'Italia day. Bergamo, one of the real heartlands of cycling in Italy, there was a time where it could sort of lay a claim to the title of world capital of professional cycling by virtue of all the stars, particularly the brightest star of all, Lionel Pavel Tonkov, used to live there, and there were a lot of other foreign riders, big names, who had settled in Bergamo. Not so many riders from Bergamo now who are in the Giro d'Italia, but we're going to hear from one later, actually, Brian's Cena di Ieri, Tappa di Domani segment at the end of the episode.
Lovely. Well, if it goes anything like it did in 2017, when basically all of the top GC riders, it was Quintana, Pino, Adam Yates, Vincenzo Nibali, Tom Dumoulin, that's kind of what I'm anticipating tomorrow. So it will be really interesting to see if it kicks off on that final climb. And finally, the Giro GC race. You know, we can now start to think of the race for the GC. It's all going to start kicking off, I think, tomorrow. And then everyone will see where they rest on the rest day and go again on Tuesday. But this is where the Giro really starts. And I guess where all this sort of 12, 14 days of terrible weather, and it's going to, well, riders who have been feeling it are going to start getting caught out, aren't they? So it could be quite an explosive final week.
I think it will, Brian. Lionel, tomorrow
same,
we will...
Same haircut yes, as Brian, yes. But that's about the only similarity. I don't know what... if he's the Baron, I mean, in sort of nobility terms, I don't know. I am the footman, aren't I, really? Just sort of answer the door and bring the drinks.
Now, I'm still scratching my head as to how we didn't find Polenta in 2017. You can't avoid Polenta. In fact, we might hear a little bit later in the episode from our friend Alberto Grandi, the myth buster, the culinary myth buster, about just how ubiquitous Polenta was in Bergamo once upon a time. So that's something to look forward to.
I can answer that question because you'd spoken to Marco Pinotti about Polenta, hadn't you? And he'd given a recommendation, but then we were invited to a pizzeria with the rest of the kind of English-speaking press pack and the Giro's kind of press attaché at the time. And so we had to swerve the Polenta, and it was my last day on the race that year, and I was pretty disappointed to miss out. And I still haven't had an authentic Polenta from Bergamo. I maybe make a trip to Il Lombardia at the end of the season and have some then.
Well, Lionel, we'll report back no doubt tomorrow.
Enjoy.
Well, Brian, Lionel certainly is very excited about our trip to Bergamo, the Giro's trip to Bergamo tomorrow. We're excited to see some sun, possibly. We're excited for this battle that we hope is going to materialise, particularly between Primoz Roglic, Jumbo-Visma and Ineos Grenadiers and Geraint Thomas. And, well, I'm also intrigued, Brian, to see if a young British rider who is at this Giro and got called up for this Giro at the last minute because of various COVID cases and training crashes and assorted other mishaps before the Giro. His name's Thomas Gloag, whether he continues his good form, particularly the good form that he showed at Contrebassa. And we also noticed, and we talked about yesterday, how, well, he was celebrating as he came over the line in, I think it was 24th place. And Thomas Gloag is the subject of today's Chiacchierata del Giorno.
La Chiacchierata del Giorno. The Chin Wag of the Day.
Tom, not everyone has appeared to be enjoying this Giro d'Italia, but you yesterday, I think I saw you raise an arm and you were celebrating, and you looked like a man having, well, as much fun as he'd ever had on that stage yesterday. Just tell us about that last climb.
Yeah, for me, obviously, such a special experience, and with it being a little bit last minute and whatnot, I've tried to make the most of it and just every day give it my all and see what happens. And yeah, like, you know, what we're here at the end of the day, it's a job, but it's something that, you know, I'm here because I love doing what I do. So if I get a chance to enjoy it, I'm going to take a moment and live it in, you know. Like, I'm lucky that we have an amazing guy like Primoz, and he goes full gas to the finish, and yeah, like, I made it so far up the climb, and I can ride in a little bit easier, and I'm really taking the crowds, and I'm going to take, every time I get a chance to do that, I'm going to take it, so.
Did that feel like the biggest arena that you'd raced in yet in your young pro career? On a mountain stage, big crowds, everyone excited.
For sure, definitely up there, you know. Was very, very special, And actually, for me as well, I was probably the worst rider in the race for a few days, so it's nice not to be at least the worst. You know,
certainly not that yesterday.
Yeah, it's weird because actually the back of the race is so much harder than the front of the race. I think anyone who's race will tell you that, you know. So yeah, being at the front of the race is always a lot nicer, and I definitely enjoyed it more after having suffered around the back for a majority of the race so far.
And I think there was some anxiety on your behalf from fans and other people. A young guy coming in, being called at the last minute, is this going to ruin him? But you seem to be getting stronger, and it seems to be going very well for you personally.
Yeah, I think it's a day-by-day process. Who knows what today or the next days hold? But yeah, I mean, it's not been a linear progression, but yesterday and the day before, I was feeling normal on the bike again. So that's all you can ask for, and who knows what the upcoming days hold.
And you mentioned Primoz. What impresses you most about him?
Good question. His composure. In the situation's never too big for him. You know, like, he's, even on the first climb yesterday, there were probably 20 guys, you know, even 20 minutes in, we've gone really, really hard, and then some guys came back, and Primoz was just sitting there having a joke with Geraint, having a joke with Caruso, you know, like, super relaxed. You know, there were guys going full gas up the road at one point. It was really stretched because of the breakaway, and you know, he was never lost composure, so that's super impressive.
And just last thing, Tom, I forgot to ask, I spoke to Mark Rafe yesterday after the stage. I just forgot to ask him about the tactics yesterday, two guys in the break. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, I think it's just put pressure on where we can on the other teams. And that's it, and who knows what the finales are going to hold in different scenarios. So yeah, at the end of the day, there are 22 teams on the start, but we just try and race the best we can.
La tappa di domani e la cena di ieri. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's dinner.
Con armasci sterento, cipolli, azzarina, mufferina, rotolo. Don, 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 c'è canonico, non do.
Brian, yesterday's dinner.
Yeah, I mean,
yesterday's Swiss dinner.
Yeah, I think we need to preface it that way, because it was not an easy menu card to pick from. If you, as I think we all know by now, you don't eat fish and you'd rather not eat meat. It was a fairly meager selection of things. It was really well made.
Nothing.
It was well made food.
There was nothing.
But it was a bit of a labyrinth for someone with your food preferences, I would say. And it was, as things are in Switzerland, flamingly expensive.
Yeah, I think I was charged for the beef and I was charged for the consultation when I told the waiter that I didn't really want the beef, but I would eat it anyway. He then went back to the kitchen, came back 5 minutes later with the news that there was nothing they could do, and I think they charged us about 30 Swiss francs for that.
It's like
5 minute
it's
consultation.
Like waiting
in
a taxi
kitchen.
Cab. It's not moving, but you have to pay.
Yes, Brian. And we had some Pinot Noir, didn't we? In honor, in tribute to Thibaut Pinot, who of course had a very difficult day yesterday, but I think he's going to go well tomorrow, Brian. I think tomorrow's course suits him. Brian, just before we talk about tomorrow's stage, should we talk about tonight's dinner?
Ci può dire quello che potremo mangiare stasera?
Sì, allora ci saranno i salumi, ci sarà la torta fritta, potete mangiare le tagliatelle alla bolognese, ci sono i pizzerei fasò, i tortelli d'erbetta, c'è lo
sì, cucina brianzola, emiliana,
tipica emiliana.
So we're moving backwards to the further down south towards Bologna.
You translate, Brian?
Yeah, so there's some tagliatelle, there's some c'era una fritta, un tipo di torta fritta?
Torta fritta, sì, è diciamo lo gnocco fritto, però come viene chiamato nella zona di Parma e Piacenza, quindi la torta fritta. coi salumi, si abbina con quello.
So that would be the antipasti, salume, fried bread, tagliatelle, as well known.
So
that
Brian,
was very promising.
That's on our menu for tonight. What's on the rider's menu for tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow's stage 15 from Cereño, quite close to where we are now, to Bergamo, 195 kilometers from the east towards west, and some of the hard terrain that we know from Il Lombardia, or the race that was formerly named Giro della Lombardia. Four categorized climbs and a stage that goes basically up and down all day. The first big climb is the one climb to Valico di Valcava, 11.6 kilometers with an 8% average.
It's a horrible climb.
It's a very
hard
climb.
I did that for the first time 20 years ago, and I remember there's particularly the last 3 kilometers are awful, and you come around a corner, I think it's a left-hand bend, and I can remember coming around this left-hand bend, seeing the road rear up like a cobra and just laughing.
You were laughing?
Just cackling, because it was just so absurd.
I mean, there's also some other, and that's one thing I like about the climbs in this area, that they just have the best names. So, for instance, the second category two climb is the Miracolo San Salvatore. Then there's the Roncola Alta, which is also a famous climb from the Bergamo finish of Tour Lombardy. And speaking of that, the final is very similar to the Bergamo arrival of Il Lombardia. That's a short, steep climb that people probably remember from. They go through this gate, the Porta Garibaldi, leading to the Bergamo Alta, the upper part of Bergamo, and the Colaperto, which is the name of that specific climb. And after
some
that,
cobbles, which are
not cobbles, but little stones.
Little stones, round sort of stones.
Exactly. And after that, the fast ascent towards the finish line some 4 kilometers later. But to add to the action, the race will face this section twice, because they pass the finish line with 53 kilometers to go, and then they take the 10-kilometer climb to Roncola Alta, before then again heading down towards Bergamo and the Il Lombardia finish I mentioned before, where the last winner on the finish line via Roma was Tadej Pogacar in 2001, out sprinting Fabio Masnada. So there will be some very familiar scenes tomorrow. It really sets the stage for, and this is a very inspiring parcours, I think, and where we are in the bike race right now, it's a strange thing to say, they owe us a bit of a race, don't they?
We need one of those classic, I mean, we've had Bergamo stages in the Giro before, similar courses, and it's always produced a good spectacle. Brian, we've heard your presentation of tomorrow's stage. Let's have something similar from someone who knows those roads even better than you. You used to live in Como, you know them a little bit. Lorenzo Rota, who is riding this Giro d'Italia for Intermarché, he was born in Bergamo, so he does know these roads even better, and I spoke to him this morning.
So Lorenzo, I know that you're from Bergamo. I think you've lived there all of your life, pretty much, in Bergamo. Could you just present tomorrow's stage for us? Tell us about the climbs and what we're likely to see there.
Yes, now I don't live in Bergamo, but okay, my parents live in Bergamo. The stage in Bergamo is really, really hard, really technical, and also the descent is really narrow, and in some corner is quite dangerous. I know really well the parkour. The first climb is really, really hard. It's Valcava. After the climbs after is not so hard, but of course will be one stage that the GC rider can make a difference.
Where do you think they could make the difference tomorrow? What's the key point on the course?
But we will see. I think already to Valcava. Valcava is really, really hard. I think it is one of the most harder climb that we will do in this Giro. So I think already in Valcava, and I don't know, maybe if we'll be dry, the descent is not so difficult, but after is continue up and down, right, left, so will be hard. I think from Roncola, Roncola is the key point of the stage.
And Roncola is a classic climb for Bergamaschi cyclists, isn't it? It's one of it's the palestra, it's the gymnasium for Bergamo cyclists.
Yeah. Roncola, Selvino, Valcava is for us is the route that you grown up, no? in that kind of road, and so for me, okay, I'm not living in Bergamo now, but I know really, really well the road, all the road. So yes, for us, for the guys of Bergamo, is normally do this kind of climbs.
How old were you when you first did La Roncola?
I don't know.
Can you remember?
I think 20 years ago. No, 20 no, but 15 years ago, of course. So, and yes, and I did maybe, I don't know, 100 times. So I know really well.
And tomorrow, will there be any Lorenzo Rota ultras on the course? Have you got any fans who will be in a particular place?
Yeah, of course, I have a lot of fans in Bergamo. Unfortunately, my shape is not super good. I'm suffering a little bit in the last days, but okay. Of course, we will try to do my best, and if not me, I will support some guys in the team.
And last thing, Lorenzo, yesterday was 1 year since that stage to Genoa, where you were second behind Oldani. Do you think about that much? Does it cross your mind often?
No, in that kind of stage was difficult. I did my best. So Oldani is a really, really fast guy. So I know that in that kind of finish, Oldani is more fast than me. So I'm not disappointed about this. And of course, one will be better, but second is not really, really, really bad. Unfortunately, this year I'm not the same shape. But okay, I'm confident that after the Giro I can do good, so okay, we keep fighting.
Excellent. Enjoy
Thank
tomorrow.
Grazie. Grazie.
So Brian, that's tomorrow. We'll be eating polenta probably this time tomorrow, which you are wincing at. I sort of promised earlier in the episode that we might hear from our culinary mythbuster Alberto Grandi about polenta in Bergamo, why the Bergamaschi and everyone in the north really is referred to as polentoni, literally big polenta eaters.
I mean, I might look like a polentone, but I don't like it.
No. We won't hear from Alberto Grandi, but I was listening again to the long interview I did with him at the start of the Giro, which you can find on YouTube. It's fully subtitled. It's an hour long. Explains a lot of things about Italian culinary history there. He talks about polenta in that, and he talks about the huge change that Italy underwent after the Second World War with the economic miracle. And prior to the Second World War, farmers, for example, in the north, they were spending 60% of their income on polenta, basically. That was what all of their money went on. And he said within a few years after the Second World War, it was down to 5%. He said the northern Italians were so sick of polenta, they couldn't even look at polenta anymore.
I'm with them all the way.
No, I'm quite fond.
Well, we'll be eating all the myths now shortly, won't we?
This is my week, Brian. We're going through all of the regions of Italy where I am. Well, I'm going to be more at home than you. We're going to be in the mountains. We're going to be eating the sort of food that I think I appreciate slightly more than you. And I'm looking forward to it. Brian, I think that's enough for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow from Bergamo. Buonasera.
Buonasera.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.